Everyone will take their positions. Dr. Poshin, you're still in the hot seat, I'm afraid. We'll see if your counsel have any. We have maybe a couple questions for you here, and if you take the witness stand again, we'll hopefully we'll get you through it soon. Thank you very much. Just for the benefit of those individuals who are listening in here or here in person and have not witnessed a hearing in the Vaccine Act, I note that it is quite common, it's basically the rule in these cases, that the special master, generally after both parties have asked questions of the witness, the special master often does ask questions. I have one or two for Dr. Poshin myself, and I'm going to be asking my colleagues if they have any. So this is not an unusual practice. I meant to say this morning that the three of us have spent many, many, many hours, weeks, and months actually studying the medical literature that you've heard Dr. Poshin talk about, and you'll hear many witnesses talk about. There are many hundreds of articles put in, about 18 or 19 expert reports. We've studied all those, and we've done our best to learn as much as we can ahead of this trial so we can understand what the experts are talking about. And sometimes in the course of doing that, we come up with some questions that we'd like to hear the witnesses answer. Now, it turns out in most cases, as it was the case today, both the fine counsel for both sides have already asked most of the questions that I had for Dr. Poshin, but a couple more were raised today, so I'll go ahead and ask those, and then we'll give the petitioner's counsel a chance to ask any more redirect questions of Dr. Poshin. But, Doctor, one thing I was interested in, you mentioned just toward the end of your testimony, talking about the what was referred to as the window of vulnerability. And you were describing that as a hypothesis, and that it's plausible based on everything you know. I guess what I'm asking is you to tell us as best you can how sure you are of that. Is it something you're absolutely sure about, something you just, or is it just sort of a initial hypothesis? Is it something you can say you think it's probably correct? Can you help me on that?
Sir, if I were able to do the experiments, I know what experiments I would do.
Right.
And so let me say that at the present time, it is an initial hypothesis. It is an initial hypothesis based on what we know about other toxic agents and the windows that they act in, the very narrow ones. The idea of a narrow window made sense to me because of the question, why don't all children who got vaccinated get autism? And so I hope the answer to your question, I hope it will satisfy you, is that this is an initial hypothesis.
All right. And let me ask the same question about your general view. You testified here today a great detail about the effects of mercury in its many forms, and you suggested that another hypothesis you have is that the mercury in the form of thimerosal can cause immune suppression in these individuals, and that thereby, I guess, ultimately leading to the autism. But the theory that I understand you're talking about is immune suppression. The mercury causes immune suppression. Again, Is that a hypothesis? How strongly can you support that theory?
It is not my hypothesis originally.
Right.
There may have been other people, but the paper that I know is a paper by Ellen Silvergeld, who's a professor at Hopkins. She is a MacArthur Fellow, which is a genius award, if you will. She's the only toxicologist that ever received the MacArthur Genius Award. And knowing her, I have a great deal of confidence in her papers. And there's a paper that she published that was a result of a talk she gave at an international congress of toxicology in Finland, which I think was about 4 years ago, 2002, I think. So I have a great deal of confidence that there is immunosuppression caused by ethylmercury, based on the work of others. Is there anything else?
All right, so you say a great deal of confidence. You think it's probable?
It's very plausible, in my opinion. Okay. Very, very plausible.
Can I follow that up and you say very plausible? Can you go so far as to say probable?
I thought probable was less, but yes, I would say it is very probable.
All right.
I believe it happens.
That answers my question. That's all the questions that I had for this witness.
Yes, I have a couple of clarification questions, Dr. Apozian. You referred earlier in direct examination to a Mexico study, and then you referred in cross-examination specifically to a New Mexico study. Is there one study or are there two studies?
There are two entirely different studies.
Okay.
Would you like me to define?
Please explain the difference to me.
The New Mexico study involved the pig who drank a bottle of methylmercury, and the family in rural New Mexico slaughtered that pig within a couple of days, and that pig was fed to children and the rest of the family. The children got ill, very ill. I think one of them died. Another one lived for another 20 or 21 years. And that one that lived for 20, 21 years, when they autopsied her, they did a brain mercury analysis, and they found her brain mercury, which would be inorganic mercury, was 100 times above normal. So that's the New Mexico study. The Mexico study is one that my group did. Now I remember what it was. In Mexico, we were called in to determine the following. There was a cosmetic lotion that was used to lighten the skin, to bleach the skin of people with dark skin. And this contained
Calomel?
I don't remember.
Mercury?
There are a number of names of it. Anyway,
Mercurius chloride.
We were to examine the factory workers who made it, and a number of people, including a 90-year-old grandmother, great-grandmother, who had put it on her skin for years. And we gave them a chelating agent to determine their body burden. We had we did a baseline on them and then gave the chelating agent. So the Mexico study that we did was to determine how much mercury, what was the body burden of mercury in these workers and people who had been exposed to a lotion that contained Mercurius mercury, actually. That clarify your question?
Yes, and did you cite both of those studies in your report, do you recall?
I don't think, I'm not certain whether I cited the Mexico study, because it may not have been relevant. It would be in the bibliography. The first author is Gonzalez.
Okay, there is an article in your bibliography, and I want to make sure that I'm not confusing your testimony and the studies. It's at tab GG of your attachments. Could I prevail upon the Department of Justice paralegal to hand that to Dr. Apozian, please? It's a study by McRill and Boyer from 2000, and it involves Arizona and a cosmetic cream. Are you talking about a separate study you did?
I know of this paper.
Okay.
Would you like me to explain this paper?
No, I think I understand the paper, Dr. Posey, and I just wanted to make sure that you were referring to a study you were involved with, not this particular study.
Our paper is not this paper. Our paper is a different one. This is I think it appeared in the Journal of Emergency Medicine. Ours appeared, I think it was in the Journal of Pharmacology and Experimental Therapeutics.
Okay. Did you come up with any different results than this study?
Yes.
Okay.
We were amazed to find out how much mercury was in some of these people. We had, until some of the figures were given to me today, we were amazed at the milligram amounts of mercury that we found in some of these people. And they were exposed to both elemental mercury in the synthesis of the mercurous mercury compound and the assembly of the lotion with mercurous mercury.
Okay. And my second question has to do with page 9 of your report. And at page 9, in the first paragraph, you talk about the mortality rate from pink disease as being between 5.5 and 33 1/3%.
Yes.
Can you tell me where those figures came from? The article you cite, the DALY article, doesn't contain those figures, and I'm just trying to find out whether that's something that's commonly known to toxicologists.
I believe if you went into one of Clarkson's review articles. Clarkson is one of the senior, probably most experienced mercury investigator before he retired. He retired about 4 or 5 years ago. And he's written maybe 4 or 5 review articles since he's retired. And I think in one of those papers, that figure is given. I said, certainly the figure 1 in 500 is from one of his articles.
And I did find that one. I'm sorry, I just didn't find your other one, and I was hoping you could enlighten me.
When I get back to my lab, can I send it to you?
Certainly send it to your counsel for petitioners, and they'll file it with us, I'm confident. Those are all the questions I have, Dr. Posey. Thank you very much.
Special Master Campbell-Smith, did you have any?
No questions.
All right. Well, then, that's all the questions we have. Ms. Chin Kaplan, did you have any redirect?
No redirect.
All right. Did you, I understood from our discussion earlier that you would, we're next going to go with the testimony of Teresa Cedillo. And before you come up over here, Dr. Oposhin, you're off the hot seat at this point. We thank you very much. But while both of you are here, earlier today, as we started the hearing, I made some remarks of thanks about your family and thanks, and you were out of the room with Michelle at that point. So I just wanted to perhaps reiterate those and say to both of you, as I said this morning, that we certainly, the three of us here and all the members of the court, are very grateful for the fact that your family was willing to have Michelle's case designated as the first test case in the omnibus proceeding. We thank you and all the members of your family, which, as we mentioned this morning, for coming here to be with us today. And we also wanted to say that certainly having read all the medical records of what you folks have gone through with Michelle, we wanted to extend our sympathy to you folks, but also to say that we certainly feel a lot of admiration for the way you dealt with Michelle, with her illness and taking care of her. And we enjoyed meeting you here this morning before we started, and we thank you very, very much, your whole family, for your participation today and throughout the rest. So with that, Mrs. Cedillo, as your reward, we're going to grill you. So please, if you'd come and take the seat. Yes, if you'd raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give us will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir.
Okay, please have a seat. And Ms. Chin Kaplan, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Special Master. Can you hear me okay? Could you kindly state your full name for the record, please?
Okay. My name is Teresa Cedillo.
And are you married?
Yes, I am.
And what is your husband's name?
My husband's name is Michael.
Do you have any children?
Yes, I have one child, Michelle.
And is Michelle the subject of this hearing today?
Yes, she is.
Can you describe to the court what Michelle was like when she was first born?
Michelle was a happy, robust baby, very loving.
And was she responsive to you and your family members?
Very responsive, very very normal, very happy.
When you say very normal, what do you mean by that?
Starting from birth, and you know, I breastfed her. She breastfed normally. Everything about her was normal. Her sleeping habits, her play habits. And she was very. She had a lot of attention. Two grandparents, my husband, myself, and then being the only child. So she was very responsive to all of us.
As Michelle grew older, did you take her for regularly scheduled doctor's appointments?
Yes, I did.
At these doctor's appointments, did any of your pediatricians indicate that they thought that Michelle was not developing normally?
No, they did not.
At some point in time, prior to that, can you tell the court when Michelle sat up?
Michelle sat up unassisted, you're asking? Unassisted, probably about 7 or 8 months.
And can you tell the court when she started to babble?
She started to babble earlier than that. I'll say approximately. Ask me again. Just baby babble or babble in general? She made happy sounds. Very young, maybe 3 and 4 months, like the Korean sounds.
And did she smile at you?
Yes.
And your husband?
Yes, she did.
Did she at some point in time start to develop words?
Yes, she did.
And what words was Michelle able to say?
She was able to say a baby, mommy or mama, daddy. Addie was daddy, juice, apple, and probably was the word supposed to be kitty, but it was key. turtle was tur, like that. She said Jesus, because my mom would show her crucifix in her house every day. Jesus, and she'd go, Jesus. and a few other
But you understood that what she was saying to you.
Oh yes.
Did Michelle play with toys when
yes.
she was younger?
Yes, she did.
And did she react when other people came into the homes?
Yes, she did.
Did she play with other children?
Yes, she did.
And about the time of Christmas, 1995, when she was about 15 months old. Can you tell the court what Michelle was able to do at that time?
At that time, she was beginning to walk. I can't recall exactly at the 15-month time she was walking. She pushed a little baby shopping cart, and you know, unassisted. She played with her toys. She played with us. She interacted with all of us, her family. We took her everywhere to, like I said, being the only grandchild in town. We went to lunch with her. I mean, we took her to lunch with us. She went to church with us, to the grocery store. She was on regular outings to visit family and family gatherings. She was happy. Her health was normal.
Prior to December 20th, 1995, had Michelle received all her immunizations as scheduled?
Yes, she did.
And on December 20th, 1995, Did Michelle receive another immunization?
Yes, she did.
What immunization did she receive?
The measles, mumps, rubella vaccine.
Can you describe to the court what Michelle was like after she received the MMR?
6 days, for the 6 days following the vaccination, she was okay. On the seventh day, she developed a fever that lasted approximately 45 days that would spike up to 105 or over and then come back down to 5.
And when she spiked the fever, did you call the doctor's office?
Yes, I did. I called the doctor's office and also the ER went and continued on it until the weekend.
And what did they tell you?
They told me there was a very bad flu going around. A lot of babies were in that were sick. She had it was probably the flu. It was probably just treated with Tylenol and cool baths and keep her hydrated.
Now, you indicated that you called both your doctor's office and the ER. Who told you that there was a bad flu going around?
They both did. The first call was to the doctor's office. And I don't know if I remember the date of the week correctly, but he was like, I was here correctly. But then by Friday night, I could see that the fever was not coming down. So then I called the ER and just said, oh, honey, you're better off treating her at home. We have a room full of kids here, and you just can expose her and, you know, just go ahead and treat her with fluids again.
So aside from the fever, was Michelle exhibiting any other symptoms?
Well, she was vomiting, she was crying, she was very hot with the fever. We had just had it was December, but you know, Arizona, it's our winter, July, everyone else is summer. But we just had her either with no little shirt or just like a little shirt. We had to work pretty hard to keep her happy during that.
So at some point in time, did the fever come down?
Yes, it did. About, I think, the 31st, which was, that was the last day of the fever.
And what happened after the 31st?
After the 31st, she did not have any fever for 2 to 3 days. And then the fever returned on either the third or fourth day.
And what did you do when the fever returned?
I called the doctor's office and made an appointment. I can't remember if I made an appointment or sworn in, but the next day. But I had an appointment for 2 days.
And
I did call, though.
And when you took her to the doctor's office, what did they tell you was wrong with her?
They were unsure. It was probably like a sinusitis or a viral, like a flu. They noted I'd just given her Tylenol, but her fever was still and they thought it was sinusitis.
And did they order something for Michelle?
They ordered antibiotics, fluids.
So did that fever go away as well?
That day was the last day.
After that fever, that second fever, what was Michelle like?
She was very irritable. She cried easily. She vomited frequently, many times a day. And afterwards, we had a little bucket and everything in a couple other rooms where she was at because she was so frequently cleaning it all day. She didn't want to eat mouth. She wanted to drink a lot of fluids. I thought she was still having the effects from the flu or whatever it was that they thought she had.
So how long did the vomiting last this time?
The vomiting lasted quite a while. It lasted, I believe, about 6 to 8 weeks. The frequency was greater at the beginning and then it decreased.
So you say that she vomited 6 to 8 weeks. Was how many times a day would she vomit?
At the beginning, it was a lot. It was like 8 times. And then the frequency decreased. But it was still frequent, like maybe 2 or 3 times.
Mrs. Sedillo, we want to make sure that the people listening in get that. So if you can get maybe a little closer to the microphone,
okay, sure.
That would be great.
Here we go. Okay, let me just move it forward.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Did you notify anybody about the vomiting?
I did. I called the doctor's office, and they thought it was just kind of like a leftover thing from at the beginning, from the fever, or from the flu, I mean. And then after that, they really didn't have an answer why. They thought maybe she was allergic to milk, or maybe I needed to change her diet, but she wasn't eating by now. So there was really no conclusion made.
Mm-hmm. Was Michelle eating at this time?
No, she was only drinking liquids at that time.
So no solid food?
No solid food.
Around this time, was Michelle exhibiting any other gastrointestinal problems?
She began having diarrhea, which we thought was because she was only drinking fluids. But we didn't know even, we just didn't know. She was vomiting and diarrhea.
And you said she started to have diarrhea. Can you date approximately when the diarrhea began?
Around the time of the fever, which is what originally led us to believe it was the flu.
When you say the fever, are you referring to the first fever or the second fever?
The first fever.
So sometime within the time frame of December 27th to the 31st.
Yes.
That's when the diarrhea started.
Yes.
And during this time frame immediately afterwards, did the diarrhea persist?
Yes, it did.
Now, when you say diarrhea, are you referring to the frequency of her stools?
To the consistency and the frequency, both.
How many times a day did Michelle have diarrhea?
Thinking back, it was frequent, maybe 4 to 6 times a day she would have a stool, watery stool.
And did that stop at any point?
It did stop at some point, yes.
And did she develop any other gastrointestinal symptoms?
She did. She became constipated.
So once the diarrhea stopped, she developed constipation?
Yes.
And do you know approximately when that occurred?
It'd be a rough approximate. I can't exactly remember, but it was probably, if you go from the 27th, maybe 8 to 12 weeks after, maybe more like the 12-week mark.
So she had diarrhea for approximately 8 to 12 weeks after the first fever, is that it?
Yes.
And then after the 8 to 12 weeks have passed, her diarrhea turned into constipation?
Yes.
And did you notify her doctors about that?
Yes, I did.
And what did they tell you?
They didn't have any conclusion. When I did notify them, it was at a well baby check, and they said I could try giving her, I think it was Baby Lax or mineral oil, I think was the name of the product. I mean, the Baby Lax name, mineral oil is just mineral oil.
Mm-hmm. And was that for the constipation?
That was for the constipation, yes.
Now, after the high fevers disappeared the second time, mm-hmm. What was Michelle like behaviorally?
She was different. She seemed withdrawn. I thought her hearing had been affected. She was no longer talking. In fact, she was completely quiet. She didn't make any sound, which is why we thought it was her hearing. We thought maybe she couldn't hear, so that's why she wasn't responding. Or making her own sounds. She pushed away. Previously we could hold her. She would either push away with two hands or pull, just lean away from us. We had difficulty taking her out anywhere. Over time we quit taking her to church, or we still try to take her for stroller rides, that kind of thing. But it was hard for her to be in public settings.
So. Were you able to take her to church any longer?
No. Not without causing a commotion. We tried. But
were you able to take her out to lunch with your mother any longer?
We tried. We made several attempts, but no, eventually we stopped. It was too upsetting for everybody, for her, for the people in the restaurant, for us, so we stopped.
Now, you mentioned that prior to the MMR immunization, Teresa was playing with people.
Yes.
Did that continue after the high fevers ended?
No, it did not.
Did Teresa play with her toys?
Michelle. You said Teresa, it's okay. Michelle, no longer, she, it's okay. Michelle was not playing. She had her toys, but she wasn't playing with them the same.
What do you mean by that?
She would want to line them up, or instead of, if it was something with like a push button, she would rather study it than push the buttons, and you know, she wouldn't push buttons any longer. She seemed to be preoccupied with certain toys and lining them up a certain way instead of just sitting down and playing with them like she used to do before.
Did she respond to her name when you called her?
No.
Did you tell your doctor that Michelle wasn't responding to her name when you called her?
Yes, I did.
Did you tell your doctors that she was lining up her toys and that she had not done that before the high fevers?
I can't remember if I told them about the toys till a much later time, because it seemed unusual, but at the time I didn't realize it was a symptom of anything. So what my main focus always was on that she had quit talking.
And did you tell your doctors that Cheryl wasn't talking any longer?
Yes, I did.
And what did they tell you?
And they told me that sometimes children will do that. Sometimes an only child will go through a phase and not, you know, and then resume speaking later. They said she looked okay, you know, was she bumping into walls? Could she still pick up things? In which she could. But so they said at a later time we could test her hearing if we wanted to. But they thought she'd be okay.
So did they have any recommendations for you at all?
Other than a later hearing test, no.
And did Michelle at some point have a hearing test done?
Yes, she did.
And what was the results of that hearing test?
She had two. One was just the regular hearing test where you're in the closed room and they try to mark her response, and it was normal. What they could measure was normal. It was hard because she wasn't talking. The other one was a brainstem auditory evoked response test, and that's to see is whether or not the brain is processing the sound properly, and that was normal.
When was that done?
The brainstem test was probably done in 97, maybe late 97. It was after we, probably around that time, after she was diagnosed.
You indicated that you told your doctors about these behaviors of Michelle's, that she wasn't responding to her name, that she was lining up her toys, that she couldn't speak. How long did that continue before you decided that you needed to see somebody?
That continued for probably about till April of 97, so maybe about a year's time, or how long? Well, if I go back to from the fever, then it was over a year. It was probably a year and 3 months.
And what were you doing in that 1 year period when Michelle was exhibiting these behaviors?
I would ask other family members or other friends that I knew that had only children, you know, did your child talk late? And somebody gave me a book on the late talking child. And there was, I think that was around that time frame. I spoke to other doctors. One was a friend of mine who's also a surgeon, and she said she didn't talk till she was five. Michelle would probably be okay. And I tried to reassure myself that everything was okay. And so, but at some point, you know, then it was like, I don't think everything's okay.
And when did you decide that you needed to see more medical care?
It was following a pediatric visit for a diaper rash, a real severe diaper rash that she had, and I inquired with that pediatrician. Michelle never started talking again, and she had these fevers, and she didn't really seem the same, and so then she made a referral for me.
And who did she make the referral to?
To a neurologist who's an adult neurologist.
An adult neurologist?
We're UMass small, so we don't have a lot of pediatric specialists, especially back then. I think now we have a couple, but back then we did not. So some of the adults would do consults.
And did you see this adult neurologist?
Yes, we did.
What did he say to you?
He said that he thought she had some form of an auditory problem.
And was that the reason that the hearing test was done?
Actually, no, the hearing test was done later at the recommendation of another doctor.
Okay. So he thought she had an auditory problem.
I don't believe he even ordered an auditory test. I think we had that done on our own later. But he thought it was possibly auditory-based, and she was not responsive not responding normally.
And did he make her any recommendations?
I can't remember for certain. Other than that, he was thinking it was an auditory problem.
And did you seek further medical care?
Yes, we did.
And who did you see next?
We saw a child psychologist.
And who was that?
That was Dr. Carlson Roth.
And what did Dr. Roth tell you?
She told us that she diagnosed her with autism.
And at that time that Michelle was diagnosed as autistic, did you know what that was?
Vaguely, not in depth. I knew a little bit about what it was.
Did Dr. Roth tell you what Michelle's future would be?
She did. She said that although she was very young, she was still two, almost three. She said that at some point she would be uncontrollable, probably not too far from the age she was now, and that one of our only options would be to institutionalize her.
And when Dr. Brock told you that, what did you and your husband have a discussion?
After probably 3 days of not being able to speak, because we were completely overwhelmed and devastated by hearing that, especially being so little, then we did talk about it, and we both, agreed that we didn't ever want to do that. We didn't ever want to put her away somewhere, and both decided that we would try to concentrate on finding out what was wrong and more about what her diagnosis was, and to see what form of help we could get for her.
Did you seek other medical care?
Yes, we did.
And where did you go?
We went to, shortly after the diagnosis, the same year in 97, it was August, we went to UC Irvine to see Dr. Sudhir Gupta.
What was the reason you went to see Dr. Gupta?
Because I had read, I read online about another mother, Cindy Goldenberg, who had a similar situation as Michelle, and her son received IVIG treatment, and he got better. So we went, I found out where he was, and it was in driving distance, and I thought, well, maybe we'll see him, and he can tell us.
When you say within driving distance, how far away was he?
He's in UC Irvine, so it's Orange County, so it's about a 5 to 6 hour one-way drive. It's about 10 to 12 hours round trip.
That's drivable.
That's drivable, yeah. Right. At least it's not. It was drivable for us, right?
So after Dr. Gupta saw Michelle, was she a candidate for IVIG?
Not under the... No, she wasn't.
And after you saw Dr. Gupta, did you seek other medical care?
We did. He actually referred us to a pediatric neurologist.
And who was that?
That was Dr. Ira Lott.
And where is Dr. Lott located?
He is also at UC Irvine.
And when you saw Dr. Lott, did he tell you what he thought Michelle's diagnosis was?
Yes, accident. He diagnosed her as moderate severe autism.
And did he recommend any treatment?
He recommended applied behavioral analysis and any early intervention programs that we could get in town.
And were you able to get ABA therapy from Michelle?
Not at that time. We were not. We didn't have any therapists or any agencies in town that provided, so it was quite a while before we got to that point.
And when you say quite a while, how long was it before Michelle started receiving this therapy?
Probably about 2 years, maybe 1 to 2 years.
After you saw Dr. Lotz?
After we saw Dr. Lotz.
Yeah, Dr. Lotz, a pediatric neurologist, is that true?
Yes.
Now, you testified earlier that Michelle had had diarrhea for approximately 8 to 12 weeks after the first fever and then turned to constipation.
Yes.
Did Michelle continue to have GI problems?
Yes, she did.
And do those GI problems persist to this very day?
Yes, they do.
When Michelle has GI problems, what types of symptoms does she manifest?
They've changed over time because now she's somewhat partially bedridden, but she displays, by her behaviors, abdominal pain, lower abdominal pain, discomfort. Actually, it's just the abdominal. Sometimes she'll hit herself, you know, because has a lot of pain or very uncomfortable. Or she'll stay awake until she passes a stool, which could be 18 or 20 hours. I mean, you know, and then she'll pass a stool and go right to sleep. And then we know that over time we've learned that that's why she keeps staying awake, even though she looks like she'd nod off and go to sleep. So.
You indicated that Michelle would hit herself when she was having pain?
Yes.
Any particular spot that she would hit herself?
It's changed. She used to first hit herself on her thighs and her chest. Now she hits herself more on her face.
And did that behavior continue?
Yes, it did.
Now, you indicated also that Michelle had sleep problems?
Yes.
Can you tell them what the sleep problems consisted of?
She would be awake for many hours, maybe 18 hours straight, and then maybe sleep for 2 to 3 hours, and then wake up, and then stay up. Sometimes she would sleep for 8 hours straight. It was very erratic. There was no pattern. She had a lot of, you say night waking, but sometimes she'd sleep in the day, but she would just wake up frequently while sleeping.
With all Michelle's problems, did you try to find medical help for her?
Yes, I did.
After Dr. Lott, who did you see?
After Dr. Lott, I believe that's when we had the bear, the brainstem auditory evoked response. I said that in right order. And then we tried to get an MRI, but we couldn't because they couldn't sedate her with the chlorhydrate. They weren't able to get her to drink it, and the suppository didn't work. So after those two visits, I read online about a study in Phoenix, which is driving distance, the 3 hours one way, 6 hours round trip, because that's around the time all the news had come out about secretin. And some of the kids' stomach problems got better, and some of their behaviors got better, and a few of the children had completely seemed to get better all the way. So we made arrangements to be evaluated, and then we had her enrolled in the study.
And so Michelle was accepted into the study?
Yes.
And as part of the acceptance into the study, was she required to undergo any diagnostic procedures?
Yes, she was. She was evaluated by a pediatric gastroenterologist, and it was part of his treatment plan and diagnosis was to do an upper GI endoscopy.
And did he tell you why he thought Michelle needed an upper GI?
He said because of her behaviors, she had a lot of saliva that she would either spit on her hands or lick her hands or lick everything, bath books mostly, she'd lick her hands. She'd always, you know, that was one of the signs. she would hit her chest, and then she still had diarrhea. At that point, she has. I was having diarrhea. I had gone from constipation to diarrhea again. So those were the three.
Based on those symptoms, Dr. Who was there?
Dr. Montez.
He indicated that Rochelle would require upper GI for diagnostic purposes.
Yes.
And was that performed?
Yes, it was.
And do you know what the results of that upper GI was?
Yes, I do.
What were the results?
She had a grade 3 ulcerated esophagus, meaning there were ulcers for nearly the entire length of the esophagus.
Throughout the entire length of the esophagus?
Just about.
And did Dr. Montez indicate to you whether the ulcers that he saw in Michelle was any indication of the symptoms that she was exhibiting?
He said that he thought that that's why she was hitting her chest, because it is a very painful condition. He actually diagnosed her with GERD, which is gastroesophageal reflux disease, and he said it's very painful, and by the time that she was diagnosed, the ulcers were very bad. The next stage, one of the other doctors said the next stage was forming strictures, which is like scar tissue from the ulcers, which would then mean that it would start to close, so it was then it would have to be surgically opened. So it was all a very, very painful condition for her to have it. So he attributed her hitting her chest and crying and waking to the pain that she was having from that.
And did Dr. Montez order any treatment for Michelle?
Yes, he did. He ordered her to be treated with Prilosec. Mm-hmm.
And to your knowledge, did the Prilosec work?
Yes, it did, to my knowledge, yes.
And after that, after the Prilosec, did Michelle undergo another diagnostic procedure with Dr. Montez?
Yes, she did.
And do you know approximately when that occurred?
That would be December 2000. In
December 2000, you said?
Yes.
And do you know what the results of that diagnostic procedure was?
That showed that the ulcers, the esophagus had healed. She still had gastritis, she still had GERD, but the medication had healed the ulcers.
And did Dr. Montez recommend any other treatment for Michelle?
At that time, no, he did not.
And those were her GI problems, is that true?
Yes.
Now, you indicated that Michelle had to go for diagnostic workup to enter the secretin study.
Yes.
Did you ever find out whether Michelle was actually actually received secretin?
I did find out.
You did find out? Mm-hmm. And had she?
No, she had not.
So she received placebo?
Yes.
Mrs. Adil, did Michelle's GI symptoms continue after the second endoscopy by Dr. Montez?
The upper seemed resolved, but she still had diarrhea. So
because she had that continued diarrhea, was another procedure done?
Yes.
And when was that procedure done?
That was done on January 31st, 2002.
And do you know what the results of that study was?
That was an upper and lower endoscopy, colonoscopy that showed that the ulcers were still healed, but she still had gastritis, and she had a lymphoid nodular hyperplasia, and I believe his diagnosis was colitis, but I'm not sure what else he found other, you know, than the lymphoid nodular hyperplasia.
Aside from the secretin study, did you try to find other medical care for Michelle?
Yes, I did.
And what did you do?
We paid to have the ABA people come in and train us on how to work with Michelle so we could try to teach her self-help skills. We had speech therapy. We tried to get occupational therapy, but we didn't have one in town. And then when we got one, there was a waiting list. And I tried to enroll her in a few early intervention programs, and she was almost too old by that age, because I think she was about 5 years old by then. The early intervention, I think, is 3 to 5.
And at some point in time, did you start doing some research on the internet to look for explanations about what Michelle's condition?
Yes, I did.
And in your searches, what did you find?
On the Autism Research Institute website, I found that they had a group of doctors referred to as DAN doctors, which is Defeat Autism Now doctors, and that they held conferences, and that they were, at that time, they were almost always in San Diego, which is, again, driving distance, 2.5 hours in one way. And so we, then that was a whole conference of nothing but doctors dealing with children with the similar symptoms as what Michelle had.
And did you attend one of these conferences?
Yes, I did.
Which conference was it?
We attended many, but this one was, this would have been in late 2002, October 2002. Well, we attended several, but...
Mm-hmm. And at these conferences, did you learn anything about what could be the cause of Michelle's symptoms?
I heard several presentations by several doctors describing Michelle to a T, with her the regression, her bowel problems, how her bowel problems had persisted, and what was wrong.
Mm-hmm. And did these presentations indicate that there was potential treatment for Michelle's symptoms?
Yes.
And were there particular individuals who you sought the attention of after these conferences?
Yes, I did.
Whose attention did you seek?
There was two, actually, in 2001 at that conference. It was Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Mm-hmm. Later in 2002, it was Dr. Arthur Kreisman.
And did you go up to speak to both of these doctors?
Yes. After they spoke, I approached them both. Well, I mean at different times, but at each of the conferences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You indicated that when Michelle's bowel symptoms persisted, that she underwent another endoscopy with Dr. Montes.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be the third endoscopy with Dr. Montes, is that it?
Yes.
And was that both an upper and a lower GI?
Yes, it was.
When Dr. Montes did the lower GI, did he also do a biopsy of Michelle's gut tissue?
Yes, he did. He did two sets of biopsies.
And do you know where those biopsies went?
One went to the pathology department at the hospital, and the other set was sent to Ireland to Dr. John O'Leary's lab.
Mm-hmm. And did you get the results of that biopsy from the Irish lab?
Yes, we did.
And do you know what those results were?
Yes, I do.
And what were they?
He tested positive for measles virus RNA in her colon tissue.
When you got this information, what did you do with it?
Well, I was overwhelmed again because it was confirming to us what we thought we had seen in her. I faxed it over to Dr. Montes and asked him, you know, if there's anything we could do to help her.
And what did Dr. Montes say to you?
He said that he did not think there was an antiviral treatment for measles virus of this type for measles virus at this time. And he said that we could try similar medication to what they were using in England, which was Pentasa, which he ordered a course of Pentasa for.
And was it Michelle able to tolerate the Pentasa?
No, she wasn't. She wasn't able to swallow the capsules, so she was getting the beads. Well, there are beads in the capsules, so we're putting that in her food, but it's not delivered the way it's supposed to be when you take it that way. It needs to go in the capsule and then dissolve in the stomach, and she just couldn't swallow the capsules.
So at some point in time, did you just stop the Pentasa?
She couldn't tolerate it, probably because she wasn't taking it the proper way. So, you know, it was probably both things. She wasn't taking it the proper way, and then she probably could not tolerate it. She had other symptoms. She didn't look well and was vomiting.
So the vomiting had resumed again?
Yes.
and approximately when did the vomiting resume?
Approximately late 2001.
And at that time, was Michelle continuing to have diarrhea?
Yes.
So she was vomiting and she had diarrhea?
Yes.
Was she able to tolerate any foods at all?
Very little. Very select. She was very self-limiting, they term it, to what she would eat. And she would go maybe 3 days without eating, and then eat a lot in one day, and then not eat, and you know, like that. That pattern.
Now, you indicated that you had spoken to Dr. Kriegsman.
Yes.
Who was Dr. Kriegsman?
He's a pediatric gastroenterologist in New York.
And how did you find Dr. Kriegsman?
When I heard him speak at the DAN conference, which would have been in October of 2002.
And at some point in time, did you contact Dr. Kriegsman?
Yes, I did.
And what was the purpose of contacting Dr. Kriegsman?
Because Michelle was not getting any better. The diarrhea was ridiculous amount, and she'd eat and have a stool, and drink and have a stool, and you know, it's like she wasn't putting anything in. My purpose was to see if there was anything that could be done to help her.
So essentially, whatever went in just ran right out again.
Sometimes immediately, if not, then it was maybe within an hour or so.
And did Dr. Kriegsman agree to see Michelle?
Yes, he did.
And as part of, did you have an understanding of what Dr. Kriegsman wanted to do when he saw Michelle?
Yes, I did.
And what was your understanding?
My understanding that it would require a lab workup prior to her going to see him, and then an upper and lower endoscopy, colonoscopy.
And did you have that lab work done?
Yes, we did.
Was it done locally?
Yes, it was.
And do you know what that lab work consisted of?
Not all of it, I don't remember. He looked for markers of inflammation, the SED rate or ESR, like a CBC, the chemistry, I think, is what measures the albumin and the protein in her body. I believe he looked for markers of Crohn's disease and or inflammatory bowel disease. I don't know if there's a differentiation on that.
But was this done all before Michelle went to see him?
I think it was. I'm not certain. It might have been. I can't remember. I think it was done prior to us seeing him.
Now, at some point in time, did Michelle develop some black and blue marks on her body?
Yes, she did.
And did you have those evaluated?
Yes, we did.
And did anybody tell you what the cause of those black and blue marks were?
Yes, they did.
And what was the cause of it?
That she was malnourished and had developed a secondary coagulating disorder.
From the malnutrition?
Yes.
Mrs. Cedillo, at one point in time, was Michelle hospitalized because she was unable to eat?
Yes, she was.
And approximately when was that?
There were two times. One was May of 2003, and then again in late July of 2003.
In late July of 2003. Mm-hmm. During one of these hospitalizations, did Michelle develop additional problems?
Yes, she did.
Could you tell the court what other problems Michelle developed?
At one point after being in the hospital, maybe 1 week, she seemed to have lost her vision. And when we went completely by behaviors, but we noticed that she was letting her videotape run to where it was all snow, which she never did. And then we'd reverse it, and she would just want to hear the sound. She wasn't looking at it. She actually had it covered up with a towel. And then when we do this motion in front of her hand or like this, she wouldn't flinch. And a few times she was doing this movement, like she was not seeing at all.
And you were the ones who noticed this?
It was my husband, myself, my mom, my aunt. my father.
And you told the doctors about this?
I did, and she had. She also her eyes looked real dry, like the eyeball itself was very dry.
And did the doctors order a consult?
They did. Again, she was in the hospital locally, and we didn't have any local pediatric ophthalmologist, but they ordered a consult with an adult ophthalmologist.
And do you know what the evaluation by the adult ophthalmologist was?
He was uncertain, but he said she did not need to be on antibiotic drops. He said she did need to be evaluated. The hospital that we have didn't have the ophthalmology equipment for him to do a full evaluation there at the hospital, so his only option other than just looking, you know, like we're looking at each other, was to, he didn't have any equipment, so we'd have to take her into his office, which we couldn't do because she was hospitalized at the time. So he recommended that we stop all the antibiotic drops and begin with rewetting drops, which we did.
And did he indicate to you that she should be followed up further?
Yes.
And did you make an appointment to have that followed up after she was discharged from the hospital?
Yes, at that point we did.
And who did you see?
We saw Dr. Henry O'Halloran.
And where is Dr. O'Halloran?
I'm sorry?
Where is Dr. O'Halloran?
Oh, Dr. O'Halloran's at San Diego Children's Hospital.
And how did you find Dr. O'Halloran?
He was the closest eye specialist. I looked on their website under pediatric ophthalmology.
And again,
that was the one we could get into the soonest.
And again, San Diego Children's is roughly...
They're about close to 3 hours one way drive.
Now, when you went to see Dr. O'Halloran?
Yes.
What did he tell you about Michelle's eyes?
At that point, he said she had paling in the optic nerve. But he thought at that point that she had good potential to continue to see, but she needed to continue to be rechecked. Because he was guessing, because he hadn't seen her in the hospital, that she probably had uveitis.
But that she had what?
Uveitis.
And did he indicate to you what the cause of the uveitis was?
Secondary to inflammatory bowel disease.
And did Dr. O'Halloran order any treatment for Michelle for her uveitis?
At that point, no, he did not. He said by treating her bowel disease, you'll be treating the eyes.
Now, when Michelle was hospitalized during this time frame and you noticed that she was not able to see, did she develop any other problems?
She was unable to eat, so they had to place a feeding tube during that time,
mm-hmm.
and she lost a large amount of weight, and she also developed arthritis, but at the time we didn't realize it was arthritis till a later time. She had swelling, I guess you could say she developed swelling in her ankle, the one ankle.
Did the swelling just remain in her ankles?
Yes, it did. It was very limited at the beginning, then it got worse.
And when it got worse, what do you mean by that?
Once she was released and then back at home, it swelled, like in a month's time, her legs swelled up to her knee. So from her toes on the left foot all the way up to her knee on the left leg, she was swollen big.
And did you seek treatment for that?
We did. We couldn't get in there until about a couple months later.
How much?
About a couple months later. Well, let's see, that was the end of September, so October, November, it was like 2.5 months later, December 2003.
And who did she see in December 2003?
We saw Robert Sheets, who is a pediatric rheumatologist at San Diego Children's Hospital.
And what did Dr. Sheets tell you about Michelle's ankle swelling?
He felt that it was... arthritis secondary to inflammatory bowel disease.
Mr. Sadio, when Michelle was hospitalized for the dehydration, where was she hospitalized?
In Yuma.
And did you attempt to have her transferred anywhere?
Yes, I did.
And where did you try to get her transferred to?
To Phoenix Children's Hospital.
And what happened when you tried to transfer?
The doctor refused to have her transferred. The ER doctor was trying to get her transferred, but the doctor they were trying to transfer her to did not want to have her sent there.
So by December 2003, Michelle had a diagnosis of autism. She had a diagnosis of inflammatory bowel disease. She had a diagnosis of uveitis. She had a diagnosis of an arthritis.
Yes.
And did anybody tell you whether those problems were all connected?
Well, separately, all the specialists said that they were connected to the bowel disease.
I'm sorry, didn't you?
Each specialist that we saw, for the rheumatology and for the eyes, they told me those were connected to her bowel disease. So, that answer, okay.
So after Michelle started seeing the rheumatology people and the ophthalmology people at the University of San Diego Children's.
Mm-hmm.
Did she develop any other medical problems?
She did she developed seizures.
And could you tell the court how those seizures first began?
They first began, she had only one that we thought was related to Demerol, which would have been in 2004. And then she didn't have another one for a long period of time till early 2005. And I'm kind of approximating the dates here. When I say early, probably within the first 3 months or so. And then she had what we weren't sure if they were seizures. And I'm still not sure to this day. It looked like she was staring, but she would still blink her eyes if you went like this. But then it would go away. But then later she started having what would be termed grand mal seizures.
Yeah, you indicated that you thought at first it was a reaction to Demerol?
That she had one seizure following IV administration of Demerol.
And what was the reason she had to get IV Demerol?
She was in the hospital to be treated for pancreatitis.
And when did the pancreatitis begin?
That began in early 2004.
And what was the cause of the pancreatitis?
At the time, they thought it was related to her medication.
And what medication was that?
6-mercaptopurine.
And what was she on the 6-mercaptopurine for?
To treat her bowel disease, bowel inflammation.
So the treatment that she was given for her inflammatory bowel disease caused her to develop pancreatitis, is that true?
Yes.
And when she was in the hospital for the pancreatitis, she was undergoing a procedure, was that it?
No, she was having pain.
She was having pain?
They said she was allowed so much pain medication, did I want them to give her something, because they couldn't judge what her pain level was, so they were depending on us to tell her what her pain level was.
So the IV Demerol was for the pain that she was having for the pancreatitis?
From the pancreatitis, yes.
And the thinking was that she developed a seizure disorder from the Demerol?
No, they think that was an isolated incident.
And did she subsequently see a neurologist for these seizures?
Yes, she did.
And when was the first neurologist that she saw?
The first neurologist, other than Dr. Maslin when she was real small, and I feel like I'm leaving somebody out. I think the first neurologist was a consult with an adult neurologist, which would have been October 1st, 2005, because on that day she had a grand mal seizure and fell and broke her leg. So up until then, her seizures, she wasn't having that many. They were pretty far apart, maybe months apart, and I wasn't certain that it was really a seizure that I was seeing. So after she had the grand mal seizure and fell, then I knew she was having, that they were actually seizures. So they did a consult with that neurologist who placed her on medication. So that was Dr. Ellery was his name.
Did you say that she had seizure, fell, and broke her leg?
Yes.
And when she saw the neurologist, what did he say?
He said we needed to get her, well, that was the adult one that did the consult. He said we needed to get her on medication.
And was she placed on medication?
Yes.
What medication was she placed on?
Topamax.
And did she stay on the Topamax?
Yes, she did.
Did it control her seizures?
Yes, it did. For a while.
And at some point in time, did the Topamax get discontinued?
Yes, it did. And we ended up seeing another neurologist before it got discontinued. So that would have been Dr. Alan Kaplan at Phoenix Children's Hospital.
And was he a pediatric neurologist?
Yes.
And what did Dr. Kaplan recommend?
What did he recommend?
Mm-hmm.
He recommended to continue with the Topamax at that time. Later, he was also the one who discontinued it. Wait a minute, you know what? That's not right. He did recommend to discontinue it, but he thought that they would, that she was, that they were under control and that she wouldn't need that much medication. He said, let her go a little while and see how she does without it.
And how did she do?
She did bad. She started having seizures with more and more frequency, and then she began having it almost every other day.
Did you continue with Dr. Kaplan?
No, we went to see a neurologist at San Diego Children's Hospital.
3 hours away.
3 hours away, yes.
Now, you indicated that she had a seizure, fell and broke her leg. Did anybody indicate to you what was the why she would break her leg just by falling?
She had osteopenia.
And what is osteopenia?
Osteopenia is it's not osteoporosis, as in it's a progressive disease.
Of the osteopenia was?
They said it was probably from malnutrition and from steroid therapy.
And what was the prednisone therapy for?
That was to treat bowel disease and reoccurrence.
So if I understand correctly, Mrs. Sedillo, Michelle's bowel problems require that she be placed on prednisone and 6-MP. Is that what you told us?
Yes.
And as a result of the prednisone, she developed osteopenia
and
the malnutrition. And when she had a seizure, she fractured her leg because of the osteopenia. And the 6-MP that she was also receiving for her bowel disease, it caused a pancreatitis.
At the time, that was it.
And because she had pancreatitis, she had to get IV Demerol for the pain.
Yes.
And it was initially thought that the seizures that she developed was related to the Demerol that she received.
The first one.
So when you took her to San Diego Children's Hospital for a pediatric neurology consult, what did they tell you?
She said that MRI, and her brain showed to be normal. So
anticonvulsant medication?
Yes.
What is Michelle's current dosage of Keppra?
She's on 2,000 milligrams a day.
Does it control her seizures?
No.
So she continues to have seizures this present day?
Yes, she does.
Approximately how often does she have seizures? When she has these seizures, do you give her additional medication?
We can give her Valium, and milligram dose if she, she's never done this yet, but she never does. But if she develops a seizure pattern where she can't stop seizing, we can give her 20 milligrams of Valium to stop the seizure as an emergency.
How do you care for Michelle?
Mrs. Cedillo, can you talk a little bit louder?
Yeah,
thanks.
Let me do this.
Thank you.
Which one is the one that's on? There's two here. Are they both on?
I believe they both are.
Okay. Better?
I think so. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. She hits herself on her face.
Any particular spot on her face?
Usually right.
Has anybody indicated to you why she hits herself?
She probably might be due to pain. She also, in 2006, was diagnosed with a 90% optic nerve damage. And again, with meningitis and open ankle carcinoma, which both of those things, well, especially meningitis, can cause eye pain and pain to the eye socket.
Was related to her bowel disease.
Yes.
Is the current eye problems that she had also related to her bowel disease?
They believe it's related to chronic inflammation from paralysis.
So she's autistic, her behaviors continue, and she hits herself in her forehead and around the eye socket.
Yes.
And she continues to have GI problems?
Yes, she does.
She's fed by a feeding tube? She eats gluten-free casein cream crackers and water by mouth only.
Yes.
Does she continue to have diarrhea?
Yes.
Does she continue to vomit?
She doesn't vomit as frequently.
But she still has occasional episodes?
Occasionally, yes.
She's under treatment for a seizure disorder?
Yes.
And she's currently receiving Keppra 2,000 milligrams?
Yes.
And she has breakthrough seizures?
Yes.
And when she has the breakthrough seizures, you give her Valium to control the seizures?
Right, yes.
Does she still have arthritis?
Yes, she does.
And we saw that Michelle was in a wheelchair today. Is she able to walk?
She needs a lot of help. She's
she is under treatment for all these problems.
Yes, she is.
Has anybody told you what Michelle's prognosis is?
No.
I have no further questions, Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We had discussed earlier that Ms. Chin Kaplan would, well, what, would you stay there just for a minute, Mrs. Cedillo, that Ms. Chin Kaplan will have some additional questions for Mrs. Cedillo tomorrow concerning video. Is that correct? So we decided we would go with the take the rest of her testimony, and then she'll testify again concerning some video. I think I'm going to take the opportunity right now. I just had a few clarifying questions for you, Mrs. Cedillo. Okay. I understand there's a problem with the microphone.
This is for me.
I don't know.
The mic's not on.
Ah. Is it back on?
Yeah.
All right.
Here it goes. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
Here we go.
Is that better there, Carlos? Okay.
Okay. Right.
I just wanted to ask you, Mrs. Cedillo, a very few questions here to clarify some points in the record.
Okay.
Obviously, you've been through a great deal here, and we hate to force you to talk about such difficult topics, but we appreciate you being here and being willing to talk with us. So I just have a few more questions. Just, you have made a number of statements in the record here, and I just wanted to ask you a few questions about them, just to find out exactly under what circumstances those statements were made. So perhaps it would be helpful if somebody could put in front of Mrs. Cedillo a copy of Exhibit 18. I don't know if you've got it there. I'm going to be talking about Exhibit 18, 21, and 54, which are three documents that contain statements by Mrs. Cedillo. Or 18, 21, and 54. If you got 18, we'll start with that one. If you look at 18, the first page of it is a vaccine administration record. I'm looking, the second page,
okay.
It says Michelle observations.
Okay.
Can you tell me about how you came to make these observations? Or if someone asked you to, or when did you start doing this?
These were made after this time had gone by. I was asked to make a chronology of her behaviors following, you know, prior and following the vaccination.
Okay, so when it says 3/18/97,
mm-hmm.
this record was made by you on March 18, 1997, and the first, is that correct?
Let me look at it for a minute,
because okay.
I've
sure.
I've actually made several narratives, and I
right.
want to make sure that I'm telling you about the right one.
Go ahead and take your time.
Okay, if she was 2.5, then that's, yes, 3/18, that's my first statement. She's 2.5 years old, so this would have been made on or close to that 3/18/97 date.
Okay. Then if you flip over to page 3, the third page of those observations.
Okay.
It's toward the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It says 4/24/97.
Yes.
And then it says, today I am writing additional comments.
Okay.
Are you with me there?
Yes, I am.
And then it says, I am writing additional comments observations for any doctors, psychologists, or therapists that want a history of her development. And then you then you provide a history of Michelle's condition up till that time.
Yes.
So if I understand, you made this, you wrote these out on April 24, 1997.
Yes.
All right. Now let me see. The next one then, you can close that one up.
Okay.
This won't be long.
That's okay.
Exhibit 21. Do you have that in front of you?
Let me see. Yes. For Good Samaritan?
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
Yes.
Now turn through that to page 8. There are big page numbers at the bottom of the
page. There are numbers, okay. Okay.
Big page numbers at the bottom middle of the page.
Yes.
And on page 8, at the top, it says narrative.
Yes.
Okay. And it gives your name as the author of this. I didn't see here where there was anywhere on here as to when you wrote this narrative. Do you have any idea?
Okay, let me look at it for a minute and
okay.
see.
Yeah, take your time, please.
No, I don't have I'm going to take a guess that it might have been early after I first filed, and the attorney prior to this, I think it was Phil Fleming, before we went with Kevin, he may have asked, I think usually when this happened at this date, someone had asked me for a brief narrative of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can think about this time, who would have wanted to know about this particular time frame, may have been when we first filed.
Okay.
So I'm guessing, and I don't know why I usually dated everything, but there is no date on here.
Now, if you flip over, then mm-hmm. well, the narrative goes pages 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12.
Yes.
The page 12 saying being additional
notes. Oh, and this might help me. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Take your time, take a look at that.
Because this
page
might give me an idea of when exactly. At this time. Okay, this was. See, I referred to the upper endoscopy in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So this was written. It was probably written around that time.
Okay.
I wonder, maybe it was written for the study that she was in, the secretin study.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, when someone asks me for a narrative, that's when I would write something like this, because the old ones were already old, so I had to redo them. And that was the only things I can think of would have been for this, for the filing, or maybe for a study. Usually I was specifically asked to write it.
Okay. Thank you. Then if you flip to the next page,
mm-hmm.
page 13, 14, and 15.
Yes.
At page 13, it says these are record of dosages given of Tylenol to Michelle Cedillo.
Yes.
And then there's three pages of notations of medications. Is that your handwriting?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So are these notes that were actually made on the dates in question?
These were made on those dates, and I found them at a later date.
Okay.
I didn't even realize I had them until a later date.
So you use these notes, these little three pages of notes, 13, 14, and 15, to help you write the narrative,
I think. Yes, I did. Yes.
Now, did you have anything else that helped you write the narrative? Because obviously you're doing this after the year 2000 or later. And there's a lot of detail about each of these days from December 28 through January 6.
Yes, I did. I relied on my old calendars
okay.
from that time.
Okay. So you had written notes on the calendar.
Yes, I did. And in fact, there's the narrative prior that we just looked at, to mm-hmm. prior to this one. I actually made an error, and when I went back and looked, I think I said she got the fever on the 14th day, and she actually got it on the 7th day. But once I looked, then I always wrote the 7th day. I don't even think at that point I realized I had the calendar, and then when I went back and tried to find it, then I realized it was the 7th day. So if you see that, that's why.
Okay. So flipping over then to page 16, then seems to refer to that. In fact, it looked like this narrative was done probably, this last page, 16, was done shortly after you did the other pages.
Okay. Let me see.
But take a look at that. There's a mention of the calendar there.
Yes, I see that, but I actually had forgotten about that. On page 16?
Right. It mentions the calendar that you.
It mentions the calendar,
about.
And I had forgotten about the event on the 23rd, right. Which would have been the third day after, after the vaccination.
Okay. Now, I wanted to ask you about that calendar, and I hadn't found that a copy of that calendar anywhere in the record. And we last week we asked your counsel to talk to you about that and see if you could bring it.
Yes, I made copies and they have.
Okay. We'd like to take a brief look at it when we're done here.
Yes, that's fine.
Along with okay. counsel for both sides. Okay. Then the third document I wanted to ask you about is Exhibit 54. Have they given you a copy of that, Mrs. Cedillo?
Yes.
Okay. And now that one does give us a date.
Okay.
Of when you swore to this, and this was 2001. And I guess the only question I was going to ask you, which got a date, so that's obvious, okay. when you signed this, do you have any idea whether this one we just talked about, Exhibit 21, which is not dated, but clearly was done in 2000 or thereafter because of the notation of the 2000 incident, I guess the endoscopy in 2000. Do you have any idea whether you did this statement that was Exhibit 21 before the affidavit that's...
Let me look at it real 54? Quick, okay? Because I can probably tell by what... she had wrong with her by it. Let me see. Let me look at this one real quick.
Okay, yes. Take your time, please.
Okay, this looks like it's just of that short time frame following. Following that, the vaccination. Let me look at this one. It was page 8, right, on the 21.
Well,
I think it was page 8.
I'm not sure what you're asking me, Mrs. Cedillo.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're comparing. Exhibit 21, page 8 to
right.
Exhibit 54. Okay.
Yes, I just page 8 of exhibit. That's
okay.
correct.
Okay.
David, did you give a? Do you have a copy of this for the Mrs. Cedillo as well? Do you have another copy of this? Why don't you come and take one of ours? We can look together here.
Special Master Hastings.
Yes.
I'm not certain I still can't pinpoint the time frame of this. I think they were very close, though, because I mentioned the 2000 scope being in this Exhibit 21, but then this Exhibit 54, it only goes up to that certain point.
Okay. Well, that's fine. That's all I need to know. I want to ask you one more question then.
Okay.
I guess my law clerk just put in front of you, there's someone's Xerox pages off the calendar.
Yes.
Photocopied those.
Yes.
Can you look at those?
Yes, I can.
Is that an accurate photocopy of the data on your calendar?
Yes, it is.
That you relied upon this to make that first narrative?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So everything other than the other set of notes we already saw about the medication, plus these notes, those were the notes you made contemporaneously at the time of the incident.
Yes.
And the rest of what was in the first narrative came from your memory.
That's correct.
Okay.
As far as I know, I'm trying to think what else I would have relied on, but it would have been these notes showing the times and then these notes showing the dates. The handwritten ones.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. That's all I need.
Okay.
I think it would be helpful, counsel for the petitioners, if you would, the notes of the medication are already in the record, as I just went over. The notes from the calendar were not. If you could make, I know the Cedillo family, I'm sure, would want to keep that calendar and take it back with them, not get it out of their hands. But if you could make, place a copy of these calendar photocopies into the record, it might be helpful if we have any, if we need clarification on the chronology. Then let me see. I think I just had one more question.
Okay.
Ms. Chin Kaplan did a very good job going over the history of Michelle's medical history with you. I wanted to ask about one thing.
Okay.
We talked today a little bit about, certainly about the incident of high fever, the two incidents of high fever after the MMR vaccination. And we have in the record the record of when you took Michelle to the pediatrician on January 6th.
Yes.
And then we have another record when you went back to the pediatrician 2 months later in March of 1996, and at that one it notes that Michelle was talking less.
Yes.
Now, I noticed in the medical record that was the last medical record that we were able to find,
mm-hmm.
and of course we have thousands of pages of them,
yes.
But the last one we could find for about a year, the next one was March of 1997.
Yes.
And I just wanted to make clear that there weren't any medical visits during that year.
That's correct.
Okay.
Not until I think it's April of the next year. That's
all right.
Correct.
I just wanted to clarify that. So that's all that I have. Again, we thank you for testifying about this really terrible time in your life, and we appreciate it very much. With that, counsel, should we adjourn for the day and then take up tomorrow with your direct exam of Mrs. Cedillo about the video?
Yes, Mr.
Pastor.
Yes, sir.
Anything we should talk about before we break?
Yes, sir.
Special
Master Morrow, we have a question about Dr. Brosher.
If you'll just give me the...
Petitioner's Exhibit L, in the article against page 292,
okay.
First paragraph.
Okay. Right. Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. There's one more then item, Ms. Cedillo, if you want to go back over with your husband. We thank you again. One more housekeeping matter. I wanted to go over here before we adjourn for the day, and we had talked. We've had requests from other counsel who are following the case today by email, and to get the witness list. The list of the witnesses, those for information, those who are following along with this case, those The list of the witnesses and the actual reports were filed into the file of the Cedillo case itself long ago. Those are at least several months ago in both cases. But they have not yet, they've not been made a matter of public record. And neither side was wanted to make those witness lists available up until now. We've now got agreement today to put the list of the witnesses with their specialties. We'll put some kind of an order onto the autism master file and the website listing the names and the specialties of those witnesses. I won't go over them now, but for those of you who are following along, tomorrow we're going to be having more testimony from Mrs. Cedillo. And then we're going to have the testimony of Dr. Arthur Kriegsman, who the gastroenterologist who was mentioned today. And we will get up tonight or tomorrow for purpose of anyone who wants to follow along the list of the expert witnesses for both sides. And we will the plan, again, as we mentioned before, was that the petitioner's experts will be testifying this week, and then we'll begin with the respondent's experts next week. We have a rough order that was provided for those witnesses today. I might, and we're not holding anyone to this in stone, but I believe the petitioners anticipate that Dr. Kennedy and or Dr. Heppner will be testifying on Wednesday, that Dr. Byers on Thursday of this week, and Dr. Kinsborn on Friday of this week. Is that right, Ms. Chin Kaplan? Did I get that right? And then next week, if we get through all the petitioners' experts this week, the respondent will be leading with Dr. Fombone on Monday, and perhaps Dr. Wisnitzer on Tuesday. We will be getting more word from the respondent tomorrow on the order of their expert witnesses. But I wanted to get that information out to whoever is interested in it, if they want to plan when they will listen in or when they'll visit us, etc. With that, I want to thank everyone who participated in a long day today. One day down and 14 to go, I guess. But everyone did a fine job today, and I thank everyone for being here. And we're going to start again tomorrow at 9 a.m. We will see you all then. Good day.